We are optimists, thinking that we're going to meet hot chicks through our podcast.
I realize, just those two, and it's a little bit like this. that thing's been sitting here for like weeks, you know, waiting to be used. It's like, hey guys, I'm a slide whistle. I'm lots of fun. Play with me.
All that about podcast where two cheeky chaps chat candidly about stuff. My name is Kelso, one of the aforementioned cheeky chaps, and with me is my dear longtime pal, chronic housebreaker, and co-host Kerwin. Hello, Kerwin.
welcome, Kelso. Great to hear your voice.
Oh, wow. You do always make me feel so welcome, so much so that I feel like, I don't know, taking my trousers off and sitting in your most comfortable chair.
Well, I've only got one chair, so we'd have to share it. I live in a bachelor apartment.
In that case, I will be keeping my trousers firmly on.
Yeah, because you can sit in my lap without your trousers on, but
you're a little bit grabby.
You will fall in love with me. Just giving you a fair warning.
I've decided to, in the intro, to have a reference when I describe you, which refers back to the previous podcast. So, did you like that?
I actually kind of missed it. What was it? Just have to remind me.
I refer to you as a chronic housebreaker.
A chronic housebreaker. And why is that?
Well, chronic, because we talked about weed in the previous episode, and housebreaker.
Yeah.
Because we talked about breaking into our house to listen to our TVs.
Uh-huh, right. So that was interesting. A housebreaker. Okay, I didn't know. There was this kind of abstract connection there.
I probably mumbled.
No, it's fair enough. It was good, though. It was good.
You like me mumbling, is what you're saying?
No, well, just don't be surprised if that part hits the editing room floor.
then we won't have an intro. We'll be lost.
Oh, I guess we'll have to keep it. All right.
Yeah, think about Kieran and Nick and Ben Davies.
Our listeners, we've actually got listeners. That's very exciting. And it's not just listener, we've got listeners, plural. So that's fun.
Well, we think we do.
That's true.
Well, let's give a shout out to Ben.
Yeah, Ben.
Who is following us on Twitter. And he was one of the beta listeners I recruited. I took advantage of his better nature. And he said he'd listened to the podcast through the Weekly Planet subreddit. But then he didn't get back to us with any sort of feedback or indeed reporting he'd listened to the podcast. But then we actually found he'd become a follower of our podcast Twitter handle, which is PodcastCack.
My theory is that he was laughing so hard that he tore his side and is now in some kind of traction and is unable to write a review.
Very last thing he did before he tore his side was subscribe to our to follow us.
He said with a meek voice to the doctor, "Tell Kelso and Kerwin, I love their podcast."
Yeah, definitely. I think we've got the makings of a screenplay there.
I think so too.
But shout out to those guys who are who are filling us with joy, it's fair to say.
They're the reason we get out of bed in the morning. that and because I'm busting to go to the toilet.
First thing. Now, I said you make me so welcome, I feel like taking off my trousers, but did you know, the reason I use the word trousers is because the word pants is problematic for an Australian in the United Kingdom. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. My chin is now rested on my fist in anticipation of what's coming next.
Well, in the United Kingdom, pants, which what in Australia we would refer to trousers as pants, and I think in the US they do the same, but in the United Kingdom, pants means your underwear.
Oh, okay. Right.
Right. So if I said I was so comfortable with your welcome, I took off my pants, then I think Kieran might get the wrong idea.
Right, we'd all be in big trouble. Well, you know, there's a word that my father used to describe trousers or pants that really...
Strides.
Well, worse than that. It really used to... like it was like fingernails on the blackboard every time he said it. He'd always say, you really should iron those slacks.
Slacks.
Yeah. I was like, not slacks, man. Yeah. So,
slacks is a good word.
I still can't say slacks. It just doesn't sit well with me. I call them pants. Sorry, everyone from the British Isles, but I call them pants.
So my
just to cut in there, did you not say pants? What's all that about?
No, I said trousers. But I didn't say what's all that about.
So we're on a trousers, what's all that about thread.
Trousers versus pants.
What's all that about? Right, lovely, lovely.
So a sister of a good friend of mine had gone and worked in the UK prior to me emigrating to the UK. So she was very familiar with calling trousers pants. And she told me this story once when she was living and working in London, and it was a day in spring where the day started out bright and sunny, and she decided that for the first time that year she was going to wear a skirt to work instead of some trousers, because she thought, you know, it's bright and sunny, you know, I've got these skirts, I like to wear a skirt, looks like the right time to do it. So she hoofed off to work wearing a skirt, and during the course of the day things went south, and before she knew it, looked out through the office window and it was cold, rainy and windy. So there she was standing at the company water cooler, as you do,
discussing Seinfeld. Probably that's what you do at a water cooler.
That's right. Water cooler moment. And anyway, she was at the water cooler, and there was a British chap, an English gentleman, a colleague, if you will. And they were both looking outside at the deteriorating weather and comparing it to how it was so much nicer that morning. And there she was wearing a skirt. And she mused to her colleague as they looked outside at the terrible weather that she said, "Oh, I knew I should have worn pants today." Now... in her mind, she was, describing the fact that she should have worn trousers that day instead of wearing a skirt on this early day in spring. But, of course, this British gentleman heard her say, I knew I should have worn panties today. So
so did he choke on his tea and say, well, I never.
Matron.
I've been practicing my Kenneth Williams for quite some years now, and I can only get as far as, that's all I got. As soon as I actually start to say,
I think that's all you need.
That's all you need.
I think that's what he built his career on.
Well, I'm glad you brought up pants, trousers, slacks, and all that, because I've got two trouser stories. No, I just have one. I've got two. That's pretty good. On my honeymoon, I was married once. I don't mind divulging that. I went on a honeymoon to the great city of Melbourne.
This is sounding very saucy. And a honeymoon story.
Honeymoon story. I know, right? Ooh, yeah.
Kieran in the UK is getting very excited.
Yeah, cue some Barry White music in the background. So, on honeymoon, you know, we wanted to do some things, but the main thing on my hit list that I wanted to do was go to a certain shop in Melbourne that I knew existed in Melbourne. Now, you might remember this, Kelso. As teenagers, there was a comedy show from Australia called The Late Show, where one of the many sketches was the two guys just walked around the city of Melbourne, just, you know, talking to people, having a laugh, whatever.
Doing a vox pop.
A vox pop. So there was one particular time where they saw this shop. I can't remember the suburb of Melbourne. It was called Stacks of Slacks. And it was so it was spelled STAX of SLAX, Stacks of Slacks, you know. So they had to go in there. They had to go in there and find out what goes on in Stacks of Slacks.
Is this why you told the earlier story about your some Australians referring to trousers as slacks?
No,
so you can tell this.
Absolutely not.
Tell the story.
It was just, it's a little serendipity.
Kind of sounds like it.
Serendipity. So they go into Stacks of Slacks and find out that the slacks aren't in stacks at all. They're on racks, you know. So they were suggested to the owner that maybe perhaps the shop should be called Stacks of Slacks on Racks. And obviously, as a teenage boy, I thought that was hilarious to the point where years later on my honeymoon, the top of my hit list of things to do was to track down Stacks of Slacks and get a couple of photos there. And anyway, long story short, we were divorced sometime later.
Now, I'm quite willing to say at this point in time, that's comedy.
It was a tragic comedy, but comedy nonetheless.
Not the divorce, the Stacks of Slacks on Racks.
Well, you know, it was actually went in there, and it was true. I actually got to touch the slacks on racks, and I asked if
were
I think
stacks.
There were stacks of them, heaps. I asked the guy, it would be really cool if your name was Max, so it could be Max's Stacks of Slacks on Racks. So, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Honeymoon.
Now, that's, the Late Show was, performed by a group called the D Generation, an Australian comedy troupe, correct?
Yes, that's true, yeah.
Oh, well, I think it's pertinent now to say that the name of this new podcast, where two cheeky chaps chat candidly about stuff, the name of this very podcast was inspired by a skit on the D Generation.
By the very two guys that did the Stacks and Slacks. You're right. That only has just occurred to me now. That's true.
Yeah.
There you go.
So it was, do you remember? I think it was like a song.
A song,
where,
yeah.
Strange things happened on TV and in popular culture. And at the end of it, they said, what's all that about?
Yeah, that was it.
We should see if we can track down on YouTube, perhaps the What's All That About song, which inspired the name of this podcast, and maybe tweet it on our podcast Twitter handle.
That's a good idea. So really could see the genesis of, if not What's All That About, but certainly Stacks of Slacks.
By Max.
On racks.
So, actually setting up there, what is our podcast handle, Cohen?
Well, it is still, has been changed to, but it is still at Podcast CAC, at Podcast K-A-K, Kelso and Cohen. Or we just recently changed it to Cohen and Kelso. I thought it was important that my name went first. I don't know.
It seems fair. But anyway, there's nothing funny about that podcast handle, and I dare any listener out there to make fun of it. Now, the dear listener and I, Kerwin, have been intrigued by you skiting, which means bragging, that you're a minor celebrity in your hometown, and we know that you are a musician. So I would like to say, officially on this podcast, being a musician, what's all that about?
Oh, well,
so
that's a can
of
worms.
I've got loads of questions for you. So,
okay, well,
sit back and relax. Maybe even take your trousers off.
But keep my pants on?
Yes, please.
The English pants.
I thought the first question I could ask you is, how did you start? You know, what was the first instrument you had? How did you get introduced into music?
Well, I my first instrument was drums, because and
not
it was
the mouth trumpet.
It wasn't the mouth trumpet, although that's something I developed later. But I can give you a little. No, that's a teaser.
And that I prefer it to be chronological.
Yeah, that wasn't me breaking wind. That was just a tiny little taste of the mouth trumpet. But my first instrument was drums, and I only learnt it because I wanted to be cool, and I'd owned a guitar as a small child, and I knew how difficult it was to do. So I thought, I used to, you know, take a couple of chopsticks from the cutlery drawer and bash and things. This is easy. Yeah, this is what I'm going to do. Drums. This is the answer to all my problems. So I learned the drums, and it wasn't the answer to all my problems. In fact, it just opened up a sea of problems because. Well, I thought learning the drums is next minute I'd be Ringo Starr or Keith Moon.
Ringo Starr, he wasn't even the best drummer in the Beatles.
He wasn't. It was true. But, you know, I thought that being a drummer was going to be the best thing ever. But one thing I didn't realize is that I had to learn through school. And the drum teacher wasn't some cool young guy with, like, a ponytail and, you know, tribal tattoos, whose favorite band was Tool or something like that, you know.
Especially in the 1980s.
No, yeah, my drum teacher was an ex-Navy officer. And he still hadn't quite left the Navy behind.
Yeah. Did he have the habit of, like, bringing up the sticks to his, like, a moustache? You know what I mean?
No.
I'm pretty sure in some military bands, the drummers, like, bring their sticks up when they're not using them to their moustaches.
Oh, like the marching and the pipe bands. Now I get you. I just thought you just meant just for fun.
Oh, just walking around. For a moment, I thought I was going to get embarrassed in front of our dear listener.
No, you're right. So the drums... the drum teacher was no fun at all. I was like, when are we going to start playing the drum kit? And he goes, oh, not for another couple of years. I'm like, really?
Yeah, we're just going to do the rest with these chopsticks you brought in from home.
Yeah, so he used to walk around...
These McDonald's empty cups.
Actually, that's funny because you know how thrifty my parents can be. When you first start learning the drums, the first thing you need to buy, obviously, is a set of drumsticks. And the next thing you need is a practice pad, which is basically something you buy from a music store that's a little piece of wood with sort of a rubber pad stuck over the top of it. It gives you sort of the same kind of bounce and give that a snare drum or a drum would, just so you can practice
your technique. And probably costs like $5.
Yeah, that's true. But, of course, my parents took one look at this thing and went, $5 for a piece of wood with rubber on it? I could make
use
that.
Use the old tire in the backyard.
Yeah, so, of course, my dad, amateur carpenter, had to like rig up a practice pad. So everyone, when it went for the first lesson, get out your practice pads, put it on the table there. Everyone got out pretty much the same practice pad. And here mine comes out with this polished, like, wood, you know, shellacked and stained thing with this, you know, this piece of rubber on it. It was just probably a little bit too big, and Dad had actually put a little, he'd raised it to maybe like a 30-degree angle, you know, just because he thought, well, drums don't sit flush, or, you know.
Like, kind of makes sense.
So everyone's looking like, what is that? Where'd you get that from? I'm like, oh, I just, got it from a shop.
The local artisan to,
Yeah, I should have said, it's an antique from like the 1920s. Yeah, it's been in the family for years. And I was kind of embarrassed and then proud and then embarrassed again when the piece of rubber fell off. The glue, the glue unfortunately had perished. And,
perished.
But yeah, so I just didn't think drums was for me. And it was purely because of this teacher, this awful teacher who basically managed to suck the fun out of playing drums. How is that possible? Mm. You know?
Yeah. I had a really bad sex teacher. She sucked the fun out. Oh, no, hang on. Let's edit that out.
Oh, boy.
So not a good drummer teacher.
No, he was terrible. I just didn't want to be there anymore. And so, like I said, I had this guitar bought for me when I was a little kid. It used to sort of sit around the corner room, not really doing anything.
What was it, kiddie size?
Yeah, it was possibly half size. If you know your guitar sizes, it's quite small.
Well, that is kiddie size, half an adult. So
yeah, it's quite small. So, but I sort of played with it, but I never really sat down to learn it because my father was, as a classical guitarist, thought that he should teach me the classical style, which I found boring. I wanted to play a song. I didn't want to play all day long. You know, I wanted to, you know, play a Beatles song. I wanted to learn chords and, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, so I learned the guitar and I picked up that childhood guitar. And just one day I just decided, okay, Dad, put some strings on it properly. I'm doing this. And
where did your parents buy it from? Was it like a novelty guitar or a proper guitar?
No, it was a cheap guitar, but it was a proper guitar, like for a kid, you know, like they don't really make quality instruments for kids. You know what I mean? Cause I think they know that it's probably going to get destroyed. So it was a working guitar, but it wasn't expensive or anything like that.
And I assume they bought that for you because your dad was playing classical guitar.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you know how parents, when you got really little kids, if everyone thinks that their 2 or 3 year old kid is a genius, you know what I mean? Have you heard this sort of thing? This is something I get when I'm at gigs. I'll be playing somewhere, and for some reason, a husband and wife has brought their small child, like a 2 or 3 year old, into a pub for some reason. I don't know why. It's
sounds like you're playing your set too early, mate.
Yeah, well, no, I don't know. This is at the bit of a phenomenon lately in my part of the world, where at a pub, like a drinking establishment, a place where people hit on chicks and drink too much and make an ass of themselves.
And females pee standing up.
Yeah. It's become more accepted to bring a small child into a drinking establishment these days. I don't know if that happens where you're from, but they'll bring it. Oh, obviously, no, it's not there too late. Like, they'll be gone by 8 or 9 o'clock. So it's not like they're into the, you know, past midnight, but they're there. So each and every time someone does that, the child wanders over to where I'm playing because it's noise and, you know, flashing bright lights. So they'll be attracted by this thing and they'll stand there and maybe sort of move to the music and something like that. And every parent looks at the child, looks at me, looks back at the child, looks at me as if to say, yep, see, I've got a little Mozart on my hands here, as you can tell. You know, also proud. I'm just thinking, nice, yeah. And this is something...
I think if you've got a child, the last thing you want is a little Mozart, because he was worked to death as a kid and then died as a pauper. So.
In an early grave. So this is something that I say to the kids. I've said this a couple of times, and I kind of feel bad when I say it, but I do enjoy it at the time. So the little kid will be there, clapping, yeah, clap, have you finished your song, yeah, clap, man. And I'll say, oh, thanks, man. Look, are you lucky your parents bringing you to a pub? My parents would have never brought me to a pub when I was little, not in a million years.
And how would you deliver that particular not in a million years?
Kind of like how I did, but maybe pull it back a bit. But I do change the tone.
Slight head turn.
Yeah, yeah. I used to be a lot more, I'm jumping ahead a bit more, but I used to be a lot more kind of surly on the microphone. I've kind of chilled out now, you know. I used to think that I was a teacher at the front of the class, and I was saying, all right, class, stop what you're doing, stop making noise, listen to me teach you what the best songs ever written are. You ready? And here we go. And they'd be like, you're not listening, you know. I used to be a bit like that.
I've got a tangent which about children interrupting your performances, because my... won't go for very long, but my sister got married and had a second service over here in England, because she got married in Australia. And I was asked to read, you know, Corinthians, whatever it is, about, you know, what is love, the whole thing.
Easily Shakespeare's best play. Yeah.
You fool, if you think that was written by Shakespeare, it was written by Patrick Marlowe.
Oh,
I digress. That English major we're hoping is listening to the podcast is like writing down notes furiously to tweet at podcast CAC.
He's probably cacking himself right now. Yeah, get that into your English major. That's what we call here, like, a top-notch pun.
Rather, in a sexist manner, I thought our English major would be a woman, but maybe that's my fantasy. Anywho, if I'm going to do anything in public, I will learn it back to front, front to back, like letter perfect, so I don't need to refer to the text. So I committed the Corinthians, whatever it is, the one everyone reads at weddings, to memory. I still have a text with me, but I was reading this out at the service. And this little 3-year-old come to the front of the congregation and started like making faces at me or doing like a handstand. I can't remember what. Anyway, but I was so delighted because I knew the text so well. I could actually deliver it in sync. And while I interacted with this 3-year-old and I bent down and like held a hand and did a pirouette, may not have done the pirouette, but I remember thinking afterwards, I was like, that was like a fucking Hugh Grant movie. That was awesome.
Did you get laid from this, like a Hugh Grant movie, or?
I'm pleased to tell you, Kerwin, that I really did not. I've actually never been, despite how many movies I've watched, I've never been to a wedding where there's loads of single available girls. Have you ever been to a wedding where there's loads of single available girls?
Actually, that's true. I go to a lot of weddings. I could, as a musician, I've actually did a quick tally the other day because someone asked me. So I went through all the invoices that I've sent for all the weddings I've done, and I've played at something like 500 weddings.
That's a lot of weddings.
500. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many available girls were there? Like 250?
Well, because you know the whole thing, like, you know, I think it's the movie The Wedding Crashers, the whole thing is like, yeah. We go to a wedding, we hit all these things. The thing is, maybe because of that movie and movies like it, girls exactly. don't turn up to weddings by themselves anymore. It's something right. that it's okay. just, it's not done.
I thought you were going to say, that's why we have this idea that there's going to be loads of single girls that are looking for chaps like us, but you think it's reversed.
Yeah, I think that it may have been something, well, my friend's getting married, I don't have a partner, but so what, I'm going to the wedding. I mean, nothing's going to stop me from going, but because of this thing that's become, you know, like almost folklore, or is that the right word to use? You know, it's sort of in the public consciousness that, you know, single women at a wedding are on the slab, that, you know, they'll just ask their gay friend or, you know, or their brother
well,
or whatever.
Hang on.
Or just
you're gonna
a platonic
have to describe
friend.
What on the slab means, because that is very strong Australian vernacular. I think maybe even 60% of the Australian population would not know what that means.
Is it really? I thought it was a common usage.
Oh, we might have to edit that out. Anyway, go
well,
ahead.
How would you internationalize the phrase?
I don't
on
know
the slab?
If you can.
Okay. Well,
up for anything on the slab? Up for anything?
Kind of like available, completely like, available for anyone
yeah,
to
but
have?
Like really available.
Really available. Okay. Yeah. So.
On the slab. I haven't heard that for like 25 years.
On the slab. Yeah. Yeah. You've never heard that? That was a good one. I like that one. Yeah, so there's been very rare occasions because I'm the guy singing. I am the wedding singer, and there's another movie that's ruined everything for me.
Yeah, I don't think Adam Sandler got laid. So
yeah. So everyone's kind of like, oh, you know, I don't think I've ever been hit on by a woman at a wedding. Yeah. Like it's never happened.
I mean, and you're a good looking guy. You can sing. You can play guitar.
Well, I've actually found...
A kid's guitar, but...
You know. Even outside of weddings, it's become such a thing, like, oh, you're the musician. Like, if I'm playing at a pretty cool place where there's lots of, you know, there is lots of attractive single women. If I just walk up to, maybe I'm going to the bar, I'm just at the bar, and I'll just look over and there's a girl standing next to me, I'll sort of go, hey, hi, how are you going? And immediately their first instinct is to give you this look as if to say, oh, okay. I just saw you up there. Yes, you're the musician. I'm not on the slab, you know. It's just kind of like, yeah, I know what's happening here. You're the musician. You're trying to tune me. Good luck. You know, it's become a bit of a known thing. So my powers are completely useless now.
It's our dear listener at home. It's just like put down his guitar and thought, oh, no, that's 2 years wasted.
2 years? Well, not. I mean, but you know who the torch has been handed to? And this is like actually one of my topics. So
let me guess.
Yeah, have a guess.
All right.
Can you guess what my what's all that about topic is going to be? Have a guess. Go on. I think you'll get it at one.
I haven't even started my topic yet. Hang on. Two guesses about what girls cream their pants for. Number one, rock climbers.
Well, no, okay. Well, rock climbers. All right, what's number two?
Got off on a different tangent here.
Okay, what's number two?
DJs.
You're right. Yeah. So we have been not replaced by rock climbers. That would just be weird. like I go up to girls and say, "Hey, how you doing?" They're like, "Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm only into rock climbers."
Well, sorry, I didn't know you meant inside of an entertainment sphere.
Yeah, the sort of who's been replaced, like the old days in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, when, oh my God, he's in the band, oh my God, he's so hot. That has now been replaced by, oh my God, he's the DJ, he's so hot, you know. And, you know, being a musician now, it's only just the beginning of it, it hasn't completely changed, but I've started to notice that being the musician now is kind of like, you know, when rock and roll first started, you know, the clarinet player in the jazz band is kind of like, hey, but I'm the clarinet player. And all the girls are like, yeah, but no thanks. We're kind of into this guitar player now.
Yeah.
So it's
my older brother, my older brother, who plays the clarinet, was getting loads of puss.
Was he though?
No, that was what the clarinet player in the 60s was saying.
Right, yeah. Well, because you were, the clarinet player was the cool guy in you know, in the jazz scene, the pre-rock and roll scene. And then I'm like the clarinet player now. I just basically have to watch all the women go from the clarinet player onto, well, you know, now it's the DJ.
Well, very much in the 80s, it was the sax player. Man, if you could play sax and you had long hair and ripped jeans, you were in.
Well, the thing is, if you can play the clarinet, you should be able to play the sax. I'm pretty sure that's a thing. So, right, mate, it was like the return of the clarinet.
You're catching me on technicalities here.
Well, I'm just saying, like it was kind of like the return of the, you know, the clarinet player's revenge is the saxophone. I'm it's back, like baby.
A superhero movie where, like, he got spurned as a clarinet player and then he went away for, like, 2 years in the Andes.
Locked himself in a cave, yeah, working away.
He came back with his saxophone player skills.
He's like working on this thing. Eureka! Comes out and weep, 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 weep. That was the sax solo to Dirty Dancing. I've had the time of my life, if anyone was wondering.
All right.
Really disgusting.
I've got another wedding story. I went to a wedding of a good friend of ours. I'm sure you were there as well, but I don't remember. No, you were there.
Was I? Okay.
But, there was, I think there were like about 8 or 9 of our friends who were all like red-blooded single guys. Cause I think we were like a 23, 24, quite young. And, so there was like 8 or 9 of us who all knew each other. And, I was hosting the after party, blah, blah, blah. And, at the wedding, we realized between 8 or 9 of us, young happening bachelors, that there was one single girl at the wedding. So we actually had to come to an agreement where we made an agreement between 8 or 9 of us that we wouldn't monopolize the one single girl's time. Like, everyone gets to have a go.
Timeshare.
Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, well, okay, so I play, when I do play a wedding, I often play in a little three-piece band with a female singer. Now, she is a very attractive, feminine-looking, but gay. Gay as gay can be, right? But she's very...
Which is pretty gay.
She's very gay. She's, you know, she's happily kind of partnered up with a very, very nice young lady. And, yeah, so she's, you know, great fun. She's top, top chick. But one of my favorite things is that every time we go to a wedding... is there's always at least one guy that's like starts giving her the eye and thinking, because she's just a very nice girl. She'll smile back and do the whole thing. And you know what guys are like, you don't need to give her much encouragement, you know. And she's,
well, I do know.
Yeah, she's really nice. And my favorite thing is watching these guys like start performing, you know, being like, you know, roosters in front of her. And just knowing the whole time, like, you are pushing shit uphill, mate. You've got no idea what's there. And I always, like, a couple of times I've actually had to go up to people and say, mate, she's gay. Just forget about it, you know.
I like the idea of them like doing handstands and like push-ups in front of the stage.
They do the caterpillar. They will. Yeah, it happens. I remember actually saying one guy to. I said, actually, no, man, she's, because I think he might have asked me what's her deal, and I said, oh man, I laughed, you know, but I said, oh, yeah. she's actually gay.
She's as gay as a May festival.
She is. So this guy, you know, he was like, oh, so I said, yeah, like, mate, sorry, she's gay. And he looked at me with his screwed up face and said, "Well, we'll see about that."
Yeah. The thing is, it'd like, be unlikely to believe like another guy in the band telling you that the hot girl in the band was gay. You're like, this guy's trying to put me off the scent.
Well, she doesn't. I mean, I hate to talk about it personally, but she wouldn't mind. She's a great, like I said, great chick. But she is so girly. She has actually found it very hard to meet people because often, you know, when she goes out to places where other gay women are, you know, often if trying to avoid being stereotypical, often, you know, a gay woman through their dress and haircut or whatever will kind of make it known to the world their sexual preference, but she doesn't do that. So she has sort of told me that it is actually very hard to meet other gay women because of the way she is, and she constantly has to be beating off idiots like that with a stick, you know, so poor girl.
before I have a question to return us back to you learning music, I've got a pretty funny story, I think,
okay,
about DJs, because we're talking about DJs being rad popular right now. Is rad still a word?
If it's not, I think it's time to bring it back.
Did I just age myself to 1980s BMX movies?
No. If anything, I've noticed that 80s culture is cutting edge. You know, there's pretty much all these 19-year-olds are basically getting around acting like they invented the 80s at the moment, I've noticed, in my world. Right.
Next time I see a 19-year-old at a bar, I'm going to go just walk up to her, lean on the bar and go, rad.
You said, that's totally rad. She'll look at you and go, tell me more.
Anywho. I was at a bar down in the Big Smoke with a friend of mine, and it was a really cool refit of a some sort of place into a great happening nightclub, I thought. And you know, you can imagine it. You know, it was like it had great lighting, had one of the up and coming places in the Big Smoke, and it was happening. And they had this really cool, really long oval bar. So I think it was like you could approach it from 360 degrees, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
So it was an oval bar, and I think it must have been at least, 15 feet long. So we're talking how many meters is that, 4 or 5 meters long. And then on each end, it had a, like Circus Maximus had a little bit of a bar which went on each end to turn into an oval, which was cool. And the whole thing was a bar, apart from one end, one very end where the circle looped back on itself. And that's where the very cool DJ was situated, right? And this particular night I was there with my friend, which was not you, I should point out. So it's just
I was wondering if this is a story you're telling. I think, was I that drunk? Because I don't remember any of this.
there's very, very few stories where you and I, where when I was at a club and you weren't the other guy, but this was one somehow. Okay. And anyway, so the very end of one of this oval shapes was cordoned off, and that was for the DJ, and that's the DJ was there, and this guy, who was the DJ, looked fucking cool. And I don't often swear on what's all that about, right, but I just did because this guy was cool. He was tall. He was at least 6'3", I reckon. He had one of those tiny black T-shirts on. You know those tiny black T-shirts?
I do know those T-shirts, yeah.
Yeah. He had his head shaved. He was mixed-raced, and he just looked the part, right?
Right.
He was, like, muscular, and he had these cans on his ears, right? And he was, spinning the tracks. The club was pumping. It was happening. You know, we were in the coolest place in the Big Smoke. So me and my friend had sidled in, and we'd seen the bar, which was like 90% bar. So we made our way over to it. Now we were, not the most happening guys in the club. So we got kind of like pushed around, if you like, to the not so busy parts of the bar. And we found ourselves near where the DJ was. And I recognized him immediately as the DJ, but my friend had not, being from the country. And so he leaned over and started talking to the DJ. I thought to myself, what's going on here? And then the DJ bends down, leans over, because they're on a raised platform, bends down, leans over, pulls his cans off and looks at my friend and says, what are you trying to say to me? You want to request a song? And my buddy says to him, oh, can I get a rum and coke, please? I've never seen anyone look so offended in all their life.
I hardly feel sorry for that guy because you know he's like knee deep in Snatch, so hardly feel sorry for him.
I looked over behind the bar, and indeed he was. He couldn't move his legs.
He was fixed.
It was just Snatches.
Well, that's the thing about DJs. Again, in this part of the world, and probably every part of the world, a stage or like a cool place used to be where the band goes. Now the band goes in a corner somewhere, and the DJ gets the cool spot. That's the another one of these sort of changes in the changing of the guard, so to speak. So where I'm over in the corner with my fucking clarinet, you know what I'm saying?
I know that feeling, although normally I would just like go home at the end of the night and just have like some lonely toots on my clarinet. Right, I want to go back to we're talking about you being a musician.
Okay.
What was the first song you learnt then?
First song I learnt was Leaving on a Jet Plane by John Denver.
Yeah. Can you still play it?
I can still play it. I get asked for this song every now and again. Whenever someone is surprise, surprise about to leave on a jet plane, someone will say, "My friend's going away to South America tomorrow. You know, leaving on a jet plane." So it's this. I thought this. Oh, I've got to put on the turn the knob that creates ambience. Here it goes. There it is. All my bags are packed and I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye. Skip to the chorus. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll never leave. Hold me like you'll never let me go, 'cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go. You can wipe away those tears now if you want.
Yeah.
Can you just feel the pain?
I need a man-sized tissue. Who wrote that song, sorry?
I think it was John Denver wrote it. I'm pretty sure he wrote it. He certainly made it famous. He certainly was the singer of that song.
Well, I think that my favourite lyric was when the lyric, which was, I wrote it down here, skip to the chorus. That was skip to, so, you like that one?
Really give you that really feeling of getting me on a... Yeah, do you know, when my dad, because my dad was a bit of a folk in his younger years, and I that was the first song I learned, so I sort of showed him that song. I was so proud, as my father was quite a good guitar player. And I showed him that song, and he went, I'm not so keen on John Denver anymore. He supported the Chilean Pinochet government,
That's comedy.
I just completely wrote him off. Yeah.
You should have said, look, Dad, I thought you'd always said you'd never let your political views influence your acoustic overtones.
I know. I was devastated, so I was like, all right, back to the drawing board. Now I've got
to
check
back to the drawing board, and let me look up in the Encyclopedia Britannica, Chilean.
The next song I learned, I have to make sure that I research the songwriter's political leanings first. Avoid further disappointment from my father.
I think your dad was just upset with you because in the meantime he'd realised he really did like Woody Allen stand up and he wanted that tape back.
Yeah. I mean, I could have just said, Dad, you know, you own this house and pretty much bought everything in it. You could just walk into my bedroom whenever you feel like and just take it back.
You could take back my guitar. You can take back my Star Wars toys, but you can never take my John Denver love.
I was actually devastated. I was thinking, but I spent weeks on this song, you know.
Oh, I can imagine. No wonder you're such an upset young man.
Oh, but don't worry. I my next song was Blowing in the Wind by Bob Dylan. I was sure that that was going to not upset my father's political sensibilities. And yeah, it was pretty good. That one got me some points.
What was the first feedback you got when you... you're playing the music. We're just talking about how your father knocked you back in a callous manner. But what was the first feedback when you, like, you know, played the guitar and someone said, you know what, you're pretty good at that?
Oh, first positive feedback. Well, I guess because these days teenagers that play guitar are like every second teenager could play.
Oh, it doesn't.
When I was young, we went to a high school of, like, what was it, 1,500 students? It was a pretty big school. And, you know, me and maybe one other guy in my grade could actually play at a level that was remotely decent. So at that time, just being able to just chuck together a couple of chords and sing something was, like, you know, pretty good. So I got a lot of sort of positive feedback from school friends. And it actually did sort of make a big difference to my schooling kind of reputation. You know, there's a line in the Beach Boys song, I Get Around, where they say, the bad guys know us, so they leave us alone. And it was kind of a bit like that, where, you know...
Because you can play the guitar, the bad boys didn't want to beat you up. Makes sense.
Well, it's kind of like, yeah, well, yeah, he's all right. He can play AC/DC songs, you know. We'll leave him alone.
It's funny, I can imagine you hanging out with the girls and, like, playing Terence Trent D'Arby, and then when, like, the guys who pop by who were going to likely to beat you up, you go, oh, check out this AC/DC I just learned.
Well, it's a common story when you hear of, like, famous people that sort of, you know, they say, oh, music saved my life, or it got me through school, or it did have that effect, obviously not, you know, to a huge sort of earth-shattering way, but...
The only guy I know who said that was Elton John, where he said, a DJ saved my life tonight. But, you know,
of course.
What do I know?
Was it a DJ that saved his life?
Really? Wasn't it? What did I say?
I think it was, I don't know.
Oh, if only had some way to look it up.
If only there was some way. Let's see. I've got to check this. What did a DJ
save my life tonight?
I think that was it. I think it was just someone saved his life tonight. I don't think it was a DJ. I'm not sure if his occupation was specified.
Maybe I'm mixing it up with another song.
There is a song, Last Night a DJ Saved My Life.
Yeah. I think I've conflated Elton John and... that other person.
Well, don't call it a conflation. Call it a mashup. That means you intended to do it.
Funny enough, the two words mean the same.
Do they? Oh, okay, well, you can see.
If only there's some way to check that.
Actually, yeah, wouldn't that be cool the next? Because I do a couple of mashups, you know, and say to the kids, I'm just going to do a conflation now of my two favorite
songs. Once again, we're going to get our female English major. Loving it. Conflation, the merging of two or more sets of information.
Oh, there you go. I thought I got that wrong. I thought she was going to get her big red pen and mark me down.
Yeah, actually, I quite often embarrass myself by using words which I can't define. So I'll use a word and someone will say, what does that mean? I go, I know I used it correctly, but I can't define it.
Yeah, I hate it when people do that.
Actually, a year ago, my older brother was here with his... young nephews and nieces, and I was just talking to, I like to talk to children like I talk to adults, so I was just chatting to them.
Yeah.
And one of my nephews said to me, Uncle Kelso, why do you use all these words we've never heard before? And before I could answer, my brother said, because he wants to show off. And the thing is, that actually is the reason. But, I didn't realize I'm doing it.
Well, we're just doing what guys with really good bodies do, where they take every opportunity to take the shirt off. We're just taking every opportunity to like show that we know good words. Like Donald Trump, I've got words. I've got the best words. We're kind of like that.
Well, we talked about your first instrument and your introduction into being a musician, and in fact, even your first song. But I'd be quite keen to hear more about your first band. What were your first band memories?
Well, yeah.
Were they related to school?
It was all school. I mean, the idea of putting a band together with someone that didn't go to your school just seemed a bit silly for some reason. I don't know why at the time. We had many dreams. In fact, the first band I ever put together was before I actually learned how to play the guitar, when I was in grade 7. So I would have been, I started school young, so I think I was about 11. So it was before I really started to learn. Me and my friend, we were really, for some reason, he had much older brothers that were into the band Kiss. And he had all of his brother's stuff. So as a result, he was into Kiss. So we were both liking the band Kiss when it was completely uncool to do so. But anyway, so we decided we were going to put our own band together, even though he couldn't play a musical instrument and I could only just play a little bit of guitar. We decided to have a band.
You had one John Denver song under the
hood. Pretty much. We put a band together and it was called Cat. And that was spelled K-A-T-T. And and of course the T's had a slight lean to them. Yeah, so we like a lot of kids.
I'm sorry. That's comedy. That's hilarious.
like a lot of like young kids when they put a band together, before you even start rehearsing, the first thing you needed back then was a cool way to write your band name. So we have that. And, of course, my sister...
I'm guessing it looked somewhat like the Kiss logo.
Kind of, it did, yeah, yeah. But enough to avoid copyright. So my sister had this...
last thing you want is Ace Frehley turning up at your door.
Yeah.
Going, what's going on, Cohen?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, although that would have been pretty cool. So my sister had this for a birthday present, this little kit of sort of theatre makeup. So we designed each other's, even though
kit.
One of...
Yeah. It was a kit of makeup.
It was a kit of makeup. So even though one of the members of Kiss, his makeup was a cat, we decided that we were going to, do our own cat makeup. So it was a little bit very similar. but so we didn't have any songs. We didn't rap. Music wasn't what we were doing.
But you had a name, you had a font, and you had makeup.
Yeah, pretty much. So we started with that. So that was my first foray into a band. But I guess a few years later, when I actually met someone who I still to this day play with, weirdly enough, he was a piano player and quite good for his age. So we sort of had nothing in common but that. So we were two young kids that. For our age could actually play songs. So we gravitated together and pretty much from the age of 13 up until into my 20s, we played together in sort of all sorts of bands, but always the two of us, because we were sort of the core of all these things. So the first band, it was just the two of us and a bunch of whoever we could rope in, In fact, we couldn't find anyone that could play the drums well enough, so we did have to recruit a drummer from another school, which did make things a bit awkward.
I thought you were going to say a drummer from another mother.
our band practices were basically this horrible cacophony of out-of-tune guitars and poorly played Bon Jovi songs. In the beginning, each of us used to take turns at where the band practices were, and my parents were the first to say, no,
you're out.
This isn't happening at my house anymore.
Yeah. Especially considering the amount of times you've broken into the house to do band practice.
choked on my beer. Yeah, so, I mean, the first band is anyone that's, the first anything is awful. You know that, like,
I remember my first time having sex. It was awful.
I was there. I was in the corner of the room. Just kidding. I was hiding in the cupboard watching. Yeah.
That was another episode. We just ruined it.
So, I mean, it was just high school bands, you know what they're like, especially, early high school. It was just terrible, Yeah. But a couple of years later, we actually won the high school battle of the bands. We actually won it 3 years in a row. So that, I guess, when you were asking about when did I first sort of realize that I was actually quite good, I guess it was then when you sort of compared to your young peers and you sort of think, actually, I'm not too bad, We're sort of winning competitions and that.
Now... we went to high school together, and I think we've entered that part of the chronological discussion of you being a musician. But I recall you and the piano player you were just chatting about, you put together a band to play, I think when we were like 15 or 16, a set in the schoolyard.
Yeah.
And one of the ideas you had was to get like the most uncool dude, uncool student in the school who was, extremely small, extremely weedy and extremely uncool to front the band for one song and sing Bad to the Bone. Is that correct?
I do remember that. Wow. That is a memory I haven't thought about in a long, long time.
Really?
Yeah, well, wow.
I'd like you to tell me and the dear listener all about that. In fact, what I'm asking you is, what's all that about?
Well, the piano player at the time was kind of known for, he didn't mind making fun of other people or having fun at other people's expense. And that was pretty much the crux of it. Like, yeah, because, I mean, we knew we were bad. We weren't a good band. This is actually, I think the student council decided, just for the entertainment of the of people at lunchtime, that they were going to put on a junior and a senior band. And so we got up and played, and we knew we were terrible. The senior band was way better.
Right.
And so our idea was to, you know, just embrace our awfulness by getting the uncoolest kid in school to dress up. He really got into it, actually. He did. He didn't see this as like a funny kind of an ironic thing. He saw it as, finally, this is my chance to, like, stop being a nerd and be hated by everyone. So he actually turned up and,
well, the thing is, he wasn't a nerd. He was just unfortunate for this young boy.
Yeah.
He came from a very poor socioeconomic background, I think.
Yeah, and he had these big teeth. He was, you know, that sort of buck teeth. You know, as they say, you could eat an apple through a tennis racket, that kind of guy. He was a funny guy.
He had, considering his background, he had quite a bit of a spunk.
Attitude, yeah. He had moxie. Yeah, he sure did. Enough so when we asked him to join the band, he didn't say, yeah, guys, nice, you're making fun of me. He was like, shit, yeah, I'm in. Where, you know? So he actually, I remember this, he actually double denimed.
That's the hardest denim to do.
It's the double denim. Yeah,
it's hard to say denim to do.
So yeah, he had the denim jeans on, and he had a black rock shirt, probably, I don't know, Motley Crue or something like that. Yeah,
probably and stole
then,
it.
And then, yeah, he had a sleeveless denim jacket over the top.
Nothing says rock and roll like a sleeveless denim jacket.
Yeah, so he got up there and sang that song, and at no point did he think, everyone's laughing at me. He thought, this is it, you know.
They're laughing with me.
Yeah, ladies, the line forms here. And needless to say, that was the one and only time he ever fronted our band. Now,
as I recall, the song was Bad to the Bone.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, he also had a, I don't know how you furnished him with this, but it was a bottle of Jack Daniels full of Coke.
And I think he had sunglasses as well. Like, he was really getting into character. He was committing.
If he didn't have sunglasses, I blame you and the piano player.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, how do we avoid a humiliating moment that we transfer that humiliation onto some unsuspecting school nerd, you know? Poor guy. Because he did, like I said, he had this huge overbite, you know.
Yeah, and the dude was like 4 feet tall when the rest of us were at least, you know, 5 foot.
Yeah, I mean, massive. He was the kind of guy, you know, this is how big his overbite was. He'd eat a biscuit and he'd finish the outer edge first.
That's two big teeth jokes.
I really, I didn't realize I had that many. But yeah. So that was fun. Thanks for reminding me of that, Mikkel. So that was a happy memory that you brought back there.
That was in the school multi-purpose shelter.
Yeah, that was.
I understand.
I think we did quite a few musical performances in our time there. So we've rocked that stadium quite a few times. I mean, I mean, any young kid or anyone that's listening now that was ever in a sort of a high school band, they were precious memories. I mean, it was just pure fantasy and silliness and. It was so glad. I mean, we're so nervous and thinking this is going to be the worst thing ever, and really, you know, exhilarating moments that you have. So if you've anyone listening that's got little kids or a younger brother, that's really encourage them to do that, because it really can change your life. I kind of sound like one of those motivational speakers now, don't I? But I first started my high school, because the primary school I came from, most of the people went to a different school. So I didn't know many people at this high school in my first, you know, year or two there. So I was a bit of an outsider and didn't really, you know, I sort of didn't really have many friends early on. But, like, suddenly music, you know, being in a band and all that came with it really did sort of transform my high school life. That and getting a really cool haircut, as you might recall, Kelso.
I do recall that.
I mean, it was accidentally, when I was in grade 9, accidentally getting the coolest haircut you could possibly get at the time. I didn't even mean to. I just went in to my mother's hairdresser, and he'd just taken on this young apprentice who'd come from London, you know. And he asked me how I wanted my hair, and I went, oh, I don't know, you just do whatever. And he gave me this super cool haircut that I at first was a bit scared of. I was like, what is this? This is what's happening. You know, and then I turned up.
I don't actually really remember you in grade 9, so you might have to describe it yourself.
Well, it was called the wedge cut. Think of someone that was famous that had a wedge cut that people.
Jason Donovan, but that only applies to like the Anglo-Saxon hemisphere.
Star of Neighbours. So actually, he had a mullet when he was in Neighbours. Then he left, and then he sort of had this quite sort of cool haircut for the time. So, like me, if you have sort of blonde, naturally sort of blonde hair, and then you cut the sides and the back short, but with a definite sort of, like I say, a wedge, you know, there's sort of a two-tone effect. So the top of your hair is kind of blonde and like, you know, a bit longer. And then you've got the darker hair underneath that goes around. So it's sort of, you know, for our older American listeners, Zach from Saved by the Bell had a wedge haircut. So,
and sorry, for a minute I thought you were imagining a listener in America called Zach.
Yeah. Hi, Zach. Shout out
tweeting
to Zach.
At podcast KAK with your wedge haircut.
So I remember, because before that I had this greasy, straggly little mullet. You know, my mum used to cut my hair, and I think I can't remember how it happened. I guess maybe it might have even happened free. Maybe my mum. The guy just said, oh, just, you know, have a go at this little kid's hair. So I go to school the next day, and again, like, it was, the week before, no one was interested in me. The next, you know, Monday morning, life changed, and it was all because of a haircut. It was so silly. That's how
people were asking for autographs.
Yeah, I think, to borrow a line from an 80s movie, I went from totally geek to totally chic.
From zero to hero.
I was, yeah. So then you add the guitar into that, and I was pretty much an unstoppable force.
My mother took me to a hairdresser to have my hair cut when I was about, I'm going to say 11 or 12. And my mother insisted on sitting in a chair opposite where I was getting my hair cut and studied in great detail because my mother had done all my haircuts up until that point.
Okay.
I don't know how we came to the decision that I would get my hair cut by a hairdresser. Maybe I insisted. No. She studied this haircut I was getting, which was a spike on top and long locks at the back. And I had that haircut for the next 5 to 6 years.
So, well that, a mullet, right? Is that you're describing a mullet?
Pretty much. Although I had a spike on top, which I'm not sure the regular mullet would be. So it was a variation.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, I mean, any version, the mullet basically has to be business on the top and party at the back. That's you know, there's variants of that, but I was rocking the mullet for a good 3 or 4 years there. You know, that was the look. You know, and pretty much the wedge cut that sort of came in, and then everyone had that. You know,
before you knew it, you were the toast of 1989.
I do remember. Some of the cuter girls that didn't, you know, suddenly going, suddenly wanting to talk to me. It was the most bizarre thing, you know. Yeah. So
you touched briefly on Battle of the Bands. What are we talking about? What is Battle of the Bands?
Do they have that anymore? I don't know. Is that like a forgotten?
They do, because wasn't that in Wayne's World?
Yeah, but I mean, that was in 1991, wasn't Wayne's World? But like, does Battle of the Bands happen now? Or is it like Battle of the Bloody DJs or whatever it is? So it was basically, you know, certainly for high schools, all the local high schools would get together and you'd apply to be in this thing. And I think it was a 3-song set you got up and did, and the best band made the best band win, you know. So. We had the advantage of the piano player that was in our band. His older brother and his father were actual gigging musicians and were quite sort of professional in their playing and outlook. So we had that advantage.
I've got an actual gagging girlfriend. Is that the same?
What?
Edit that out.
A gagging girl? Did I say gagging?
No, you said gigging.
Oh, gigging, right.
Gigging so. Musicians, and I just saw an opportunity. Sorry, I went for it, and I'm kind of regretting it now, so edit that out.
Edit that out. So, yeah, Battle of the Bands. I mean, I remember we won. We had the grand prize in our first Battle of the Bands. It was $200. We won $200 as first prize.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
That
How
was.
Many in the band?
Unfortunately, it ended up being six people in the band. It kept blowing out as our piano player was a huge fan of Bon Jovi. And so he decided he didn't want to just be the keyboard player anymore. He wanted to be just the singer. So he got in another keyboard player. And he asked his older brother to play lead guitar because we didn't sort of really have a good enough lead guitarist. And he said, well, I know a young kid that can play. I'll get him in and I'll just play and sing and play saxophone in the band. So this four-piece band that was just basically doing Beatles songs suddenly became this six-piece orchestra that were... unfortunately, no funny stories there, but... good times. You're really taking me down memory lane, Kelsa. I love this. Is I haven't thought about a lot of these things for a long time.
Well, what we didn't realize until last episode, and we were chatting about it off air, is that turns out the whole idea behind this podcast is for you and I to be able to talk about our stories from our lifetime together. Without either one of us going, oh, I fucking heard this story so many times. Basically, this podcast is a complete ruse, so that we can tell each other
old
stories again.
Reminiscing. Yeah. What's all that about?
Well, the river band hit us with it.
Oh,
go.
Quickly, get my guitar.
Friday night, it was late, I was walking you home. We got down to the gate, and I was dreaming of the night. Would it turn out right? How to tell you, girl? I wanna build my world around you and tell you that it's true. And oh, the times I'm missing, spending the hours reminiscing.
Oh yeah, I do like that song.
Fantastic. I mean, Little River Band, underrated, I dare say.
Underrated, yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Listen, I had, I have a memory from that first Battle of the Bands you entered, and this is where I kind of enter into the Kerwin professional musician story, because I was there.
You were there.
Yeah, I was lighting my lighter. Hang on. No, I wasn't. I didn't have a lighter. But I remember you telling me a story later, because one of the songs you guys played was Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you guys performed it really well, but you had a quandary because you wanted to appeal to the older, more mature judges who were judging. Right.
Well, I was going to say that you're talking about the second. So the first one with the six-piece band, when we did that song, we'd streamline it down to a more reasonable five-piece band at that point. We touched on my guitar playing friend Judge. That's when he joined the band. So Judge was in.
Am I mistaken? No. The story I was going to tell is you played Knocking on Heaven's Door, which was at the time was a huge hit. From Guns N' Roses. Who played the original?
Well, it's originally a Bob Dylan song, but I think a few people had a stab at it. But certainly Guns N' Roses kind of made it cool again at that time.
Now, you found yourself in the position where you wanted to appeal to the crowd, who were all 16 and 17-year-olds, where they knew that song was a hit by Guns N' Roses. But you also wanted to... appeal to the judges who knew that the original was done by Bob Dylan, as you said. And I think you guys went in the right direction because when you announced the song, you said, who wants to hear a little bit of Guns N' Roses, and then launched into Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Yeah.
And I remember you got marked down by some of the judges and their comments were, that song is not by Guns N' Roses, by Bob Dylan, right? I just remember thinking, like, what a, come on, if you were smart enough as the judge, you'd realize that those guys had realized that they were smart enough to realize that for their audience, they should not reference Bob Dylan, who, you know, like...
Exactly, yeah.
85% of the crowd had never heard of before, but they had 100% of the crowd have heard of Guns N' Roses' cover of it. So yeah, I
and
remember
we
thinking,
certainly didn't go...
I've never forgot that story. It's like, wow.
Yeah, I know, that was a bit much, because, I mean, although we might have said Guns N' Roses, we didn't sing the chorus with a, hey, yay, 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 yay.
Yeah, but you fucking should have.
Yeah, we probably should have. You know, every time I hear that song, if someone's playing it around town these days, they'll do that version. They'll chuck in that little bit of Axl Rose doing that thing.
Wow. If you're a vocalist, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, why not, you know? He was better off impersonating Axl Rose than Bob Dylan, you know. But, hello? Kelso? Are you there? Hello. What's happened? Hello.
Hello.
Oh, there we go. All right. I wonder what happened there.
All of a sudden, I had some ringing in my ears, which I haven't had since I fought Mike Tyson back in 93.
Oh, who can forget? The good old names.
Battle of the Heavyweights.
Yeah.
I wonder if Mike Tyson was actually fighting in 93.
What a time to be alive, though.
I think Mike Tyson's been fighting since his birth, aged plus 5 years, so he probably was. Not necessarily in the ring.
I think he's been beaten about the ring, if you know what I'm saying. His time in prison.
Oh, I don't know about that. You may have to be pretty fucking tough to be the prisoner who tried to rape Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Or have some pretty extensive influence, let's put it that way.
You're probably thinking, yeah, fine, I'm going to jail. I'm going to be a kingpin of this jail. And then he finds his new cellmate is Lennox Lewis. It's like, fuck! All the people!
Or imagine you're the guy who goes to prison for the first time and you've taken all your education from prison movies and you realise if you're going to survive, you have to attack the toughest guy in the jail. And it happens to be Mike Tyson.
Do you remember that scene from, was it Half Baked, where Tommy Chong was, you know, that guy who got sent to prison? Hey, you stay away from my bitch. And then he goes, yeah, that's right, you heard. I'm somebody's bitch. so many memories.
Do you think you would be somebody's bitch?
Probably, unfortunately. I've got really smooth, supple hands and, you know, cheek bones that won't quit.
And you can bend over really far.
Within the first week, someone would probably knock all my teeth out, so I'd give better blowjobs, I reckon.
Now that's comedy.
That's the fate that awaits me, you know. I remember an ex-girlfriend almost accidentally putting her finger up my backside, and I remember saying to her, just getting a little bit upset, I said, I always thought I'd lose my anal virginity in prison.
She almost accidentally, I like that.
Yeah, well, you know, she was pretending to do it, you know. And then she almost accidentally did it. You know, girls go, I'll do it, Dave. And, you know, just, you know, goes to do it. But, you know.
I think she had a interior motive, eh? Oh, hey.
Snap.
Whoa. Hey. Snap. I think I made,
that was
falling into the mistake that Ian Hislop makes on Have I Got News For You. When he makes a gag, he always plays it up to the audience.
Okay.
It's like, oh, I made a gag. How about it?
Okay, so you're saying he's not very funny? Is that sounds like something that someone's not very funny does?
Yes. Right. Well, he's not a comedian, let's put it that way.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Because I haven't probably watched enough Would I Lie To You as I probably should, considering Rob Brydon's...
No, Have I Got News For You, not Would I Lie To You.
Oh, sorry, right, okay. Well, that's probably what I don't watch. We don't get that here.
Right, yeah, it's probably a bit too topical.
Yeah, a bit too British-centric... Perhaps.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. So they'll have, I reckon, probably at least 50% of their stuff is, UK interior. If that makes sense.
Boring. No, it's
boring. it is actually.
Right. I was going to say I haven't been there, but I believe it's lovely.
But boring.
Boring. Yeah. So
no, it's just like a local political introspection in any country is a little bit boring, apart from in the US at the moment, where it's extremely interesting.
I know. I can't get enough. Basically, I don't watch TV news. I just get up in the morning, go straight to YouTube, and everything.
Call Bear It Up.
Well, yeah, it starts with that, but all this, all because I watch so much of it, my just turn on YouTube straight away. My recommendations on my channel is basically all the stuff I want to watch. All the MSNBC people that I like, and Colbert, Seth Meyers, Jimmy Kimmel.
Do you think that the other chap, who's the other late night guy, not Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon? Do you think he looks a little bit like Mike Myers?
A young Mike Myers, maybe. I guess so. Yeah, very young Mike Myers.
I think he's got the same chubby face and the same kind of ham face when he makes his ham face.
Right, that I see. Yeah, the boyish charm, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's my least favorite of all the guys, but funnily enough, he's got the old Johnny Carson show, so that means he's got the best, supposedly the best, you know, job. But I think
who was in between Johnny Carson and him then? Leno.
Yeah, Leno. Yeah, all that very strange period where Conan O'Brien took over for. Yeah, that was interesting. But I mean, he's obviously very talented, but I just find he panders to the guest too much. He kind of sucks up to him. And if you're talking about Donald Trump, that's kind of probably the low point of his career when he was kind of kissing Donald Trump's ass like 2 months before the election. And he does this thing where he fake laughs or over laughs at things. It just doesn't sound genuine to me. And maybe it's because I'm more mature that I prefer the stylings of Colbert and Kimmel and Myers.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Seth Meyers. I've only come onto him in the last 3 or 4 months, but I like him.
Well, he's certainly got chops as the head writer of Saturday Night Live for a long time and other things. So he.
Yeah, and he's got great hair.
That counts. Well, they've all got great hair when you think about it. All the late night hosts, they've all got a pretty decent coif going on.
Well, the guys on the Weekly Planet, they talk about actors having Hollywood hair, which is quite funny.
Right, right, yeah.
And they had one episode where they went through all the Mission Impossible movies, and part of their breakdown of each movie was to talk about Tom Cruise's hair. Which is a classic.
Well, he does have great hair for what? Is he nudging 60? He must be getting on to 60.
Well, yeah, no, I think he's on the better side of 55, but yeah, he's definitely getting old.
Absolutely.
I have to look it up quickly.
Yeah, well, good on you. But I would say he's 56 if I had to.
Ah, wow. That's amazing.
How old is he? If only there was some way we could find out this information at the touch of a mouse. A mouse click.
Exactly.
All right, it's too late. We're going to have to find this out now. I'm not going to be able to move on.
I thought you'd found it out and said, 56, I think.
No, I was just having a stab.
I'll say 54 then.
54. Okay, let's play Tom Cruise Age Lottery. And the winner is, drumroll please. Now Google's decided it's going to take forever. He is. Oh, you're right on. You were 54. You get the chocolates.
Oh, I love chocolates.
And actually, as Google comes up, it gives you down the side of the page. It actually has
chocolates.
Actually has 9 little thumbnails of different periods of Tom Cruise's career. Each photo hair on point. So you're absolutely right.
Well, I think one of the things you get when you become a Scientologist is your own dedicated hairstylist, who's also a Scientologist, I should point out. So.
Right.
Going clear.
That's probably why I was never invited as a bald man.
You know, betting on how old Tom Cruise is a risky business. When it comes to guessing age, I've never been a Top Gun.
Oh, no. Well, you are a bit of a legend. That was one of his first movies. Yeah.
Because normally guessing someone's age is a Mission Impossible.
Yeah. And for me, a Mission Impossible 2. That's T-O-O.
Let's play a little sick. Do you think we could record this podcast the day after tomorrow?
Maybe. I was going to say something about the 4th of July, but that's the wheels have fallen off. Sorry, mate.
My phone's calling. I have to take a break. It's The Mummy. That was too far.
I know, it was a bit much. Yeah. Well, you know, it's, as Tom Cruise would say, it's hard to find a few good men. And I totally did not Google a whole list of Tom Cruise movie titles there to get that one. That just came from the top of my mind.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm such a huge fan.
I know you. There's no way you would have had time to have done that.
And how would I have even achieved that?
Exactly. Feat? There's way to look that up.
Who would even do that?
I also want to talk about your second Bell of the Bands, at least as I remember it, because you had a second dig at high school Battle of the Bands,
mm-hmm.
and you had an ingenious idea. And the further I get from that year, looking back, it was like such a great idea. And the reason I think it was a great idea is because I think grunge was happening. Rock and roll was strong as it's ever been. But you and the guys in your new band had this idea where you would bring a new, a fresh idea to the scene. And it blew everyone away, and it was called the Brass Holes. Can you pick up the story?
Yeah, well, you were right. It was an age of, I guess, at this stage, it was all about Nirvana. It was all about grunge, you're right. So, but also at the same time, maybe a year earlier, this Irish movie called The Commitments had come out. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, I do remember it.
Yeah, it was basically just about, a bunch of misfits that put together a soul band in a tough working class Irish town. It might have even been Dublin. I'm not sure exactly, but like it was like you say, it was against the grain.
But they were committed.
Yeah, they were very, very committed. so we kind of took a leaf from that book and.
Sorry, still laughing at my joke.
Yes, it was a cracker.
So I remember being at this Battle of the Bands. And, Nirvana, cover bands, grunge, wannabes, filling up the night. And the end of the night, you had the coveted last spot, as you described it. And it was such a, contrast because, your band was doing what?
Well, we were soul. Well, it's actually funny because that wasn't quite how it went down. So in the earlier the Battle of the Bands, where I knew the girl that was running it and could get us the last spot. You may not remember, we were actually third last that year because the guy that played last, his girlfriend had taken over the running of the Battle of the Bands and they insisted on getting the last slot because they were pretty much bridesmaids every year to us winning.
Yeah, and I remember this was, I won't say his name, but I remember their band was pretty damn hot.
They were good. They thought they were going to win.
Any other year they would have.
They may have. And an interesting little bit of symmetry. You remember how in the podcast one or the second podcast, again, confusing, I was talking about all those pornographic magazines I shoplifted? It was
so many.
It was his family. This guy that got the cover. It was his family's news agent from where I stole these. So I guess I had the last laugh.
Hang on.
Not only was I beating this kid at Battle of the Bands for many years in a row, I was also helping myself to his family's wealth.
I'm pretty sure his family had no idea that a young man like yourself would be interested in stealing pornographic magazines.
Yeah, so this poor kid, was shafted by me.
To digress, I'm sure we'll edit this out, but yeah. you said you stole like 30 pornographic magazines.
Yeah.
You were keeping them all in one shoebox.
No, well, thing is,
what was the size of that shoebox?
Well, this is the thing. So remember I mentioned how my mother discovered them and threw them out? Well, I guess there was about 15 in there, and it just meant that it was shoplifting part two. So in total, I stole about 30 magazines. So I just was basically going back there and getting my D Cup Wonder, Heavy Hangers, Hot Oriental Babes. So just replenished my collection. Because when you don't have to pay for it, it's quite easy. okay, so that year of the Battle Bands, it was my band. We decided, we'd zig when everyone else was zagging. That was our theory. And, we sort of stole the Commitments idea and put together a soul band, you know. So it was me and the cool school captain at the time. You might remember him. He played the trombone and
I remember him.
Yeah. So him and his mates. It was basically us, and we put that together. Now the rules of the metal of the bands used to be that at least two members of the band had to go to high school. And back then, most people in the band, only had four or five members in them anyway. So we had a few people that had finished school in the band. So suddenly they changed the rule that meant, I think it was two-thirds of the band had to go to high school. So we had, I think at the time,
12.
Yeah, I think we had eight people in the band, of which maybe four didn't go to school. And so I suddenly had to draft in four girls to just be doo-wop backup singers, just to sort of flesh out the numbers. So now we went from an eight-piece band to a 12-piece band.
Not to reduce the role of the backup singer.
Not at all. I mean, it was quite good, and it was a bit of a challenge for the sound guy to suddenly have to produce so many microphones, but they did a good job.
How many microphones?
There would have been, count them. There was a lot of things happening on the stage, and they changed venue. It was at this sort of nightclub in the beginning, and then they sort of moved it to this kind of semi outdoor sound shell that was, it was pretty cool.
Fully outdoor.
Yeah, it was. You're right. Fully outdoor. So this big sort of stage, and it was, So of course we went on there and completely blew everyone away again, because when everyone else is playing these, to the older judges, everyone's doing this grunge music. Suddenly we get up and do some pretty nice, I think we did songs like The Letter by Joe Cocker and,
Looking back, it was such a fresh, breath of fresh air, rocked the place. And I think that's why you guys won. First of all, the performance was immaculate, but the difference between you and everyone else was just amazing.
Yeah, we were pretty lucky to have some pretty good musicians at my school at that stage. It was just this big band of kids basically just, completely rocking these great old soul tunes. And
Plus some ring-ins.
Yeah. So I remember we got in a much older guy on the drums. He was the hottest drummer in town, so that was a good, good sort of anchor to have in the band. It was just a cool moment because we kind of knew that everything was against us. The band that the new girlfriend that was running it, that her boyfriend's band, they really, they'd obviously thought that this was going to be their year, but they were pipped at the post by us. And
so can you remember the songs you played?
Well, we started off, we took a cue from Blues Brothers. There's a song called Can't Turn You Loose where Jake and Elwood come out to this instrumental, bam, 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 bam. It's like a little play on. So I remember actually being backstage while the band actually played this, and I walked out during this little minutes intro and did the whole, lead singer glory moment. And we did. We definitely did The Letter by Joe Cocker, and what was the other thing? I think we might have done something like a Mustang Sally or something like that.
Mustang Sally rings a bell.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty cool. It was, and maybe we did Shake a Tail Feather or something like that.
Yeah, that rings a bell too. Yeah.
So it was just like great old songs, and the crowd were just loving it because it was
Hang on just a minute. I've got lots of bells around my microphone. I'm just going to, every time you said something, it rang a bell. So just going to put those bells a little bit further back.
It was like the church on Sunday.
Yeah, I was there in the audience, and it was blowing my mind. It was like, when you like really support someone, you hope they're going to win, and all of a sudden you just realize that's the best thing I've ever seen.
And a real twist of the knife, because there was a few. To those guys, those poor guys, I thought they were going to win. Not only did we win, they had some categories like best guitarist, best drummer. And I did a 12-bar harmonica solo in one of these songs. And it was pretty cool, but it was like this tiny little moment where I just played harmonica. Anyway, I won best other instrument in that category.
Yeah, it was only 12 bars.
It was only 12 bars. And could have been more, but I only just thought 12 bars, you know, that's enough. But the final indignation for these poor guys was me accepting the award and lifting the trophy, you know, that also had my other band's name on it from the two previous years. And, you know, so we kind of, Battle of the Bands was sort of really did set me off on a decent musical career, which I still do professionally.
Yeah, you're a minor celebrity. Well, I want to touch on that. What was the name of that Battle of the Bands band? Because I don't think we've brought it up yet. Because I believe it was quite kind of funny. And
in the first two Battle of the Bands? Yeah. Well,
the one we were just talking about where you won the harmonica solo.
Well, we were called the Brass Holes.
Brass Holes.
Brass Holes, yeah. There's a funny story about the first band name. You know how, like, on the telephone, sometimes the words that have an S in them can sometimes sound like an F? You don't know that? Sometimes how on a telephone, an S can sometimes sound like an F, which is what, you know, they do that Bravo Tango thing, because apparently on, lo-fi radio sounds, sometimes some consonant sounds kind of sound the same. You don't know that. You didn't know that.
Well, no, I know there's a reason for the alphanumeric. No, what do they call it? Phononic alphabet.
Yeah.
I'm trying to work out how that fits into the Battle of the Bands.
I know. Well, yeah, I know. I'm about to bring it round. So here we go. The first band that I was in that won was called The Mess, as in.
That's right.
It's a mess. Clean up your mess. So we got a call from the guy that was engraving the trophy saying, okay, what was that band name? So we said The Mess, right? So the next year when that trophy was presented to us as the Brass Holes, there's a video of this. I look on it and on the little shield, it said The Meff, M-E-F-F. And I went, The Meff?
That's comedy. Oh. So imagine if you'd gone on to like a Hollywood superstardom, you would have been known as the Meth.
The Meth. Subsequent winners, long after I left school, must have been going, man, that band, The Meth, that won it 2 years in a row must have been pretty damn good.
It's time for Cover from Another Mother.
Yippee.
Which we introduced. Yippee. Which we introduced last episode. So I was thinking perhaps, Kerwin, you would indulge me and the dear listener with playing a song from your Battle of the Band days. So maybe from the era of the Meff.
The Meff.
or the Brass Holes. It's up to you.
Yeah, okay. But, okay.
How about I'm going to lay it wide open. So over to you. Can you think of some sort of song from that vintage that you could play as a cover to it from Another Mother?
Okay, well, I can. I think of the song that I really enjoy playing with the Brass Holes, because that was my year. That was my band.
That was a good year, and that was a good band, and that was a good band name.
Okay, so here we go.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. I ain't got time to make a fast train. All the lonely days are gone. I'm coming home. Yeah, my baby, she wrote me a letter. Don't know how much money I got to spend. I gotta find my way back home again. And all the lonely days are gone. I'm coming home. Yeah, my baby, she wrote me a letter. Well, she wrote me a letter, and she said that she couldn't live without me no more. Listen, mister, can't you see? I got to get back to my baby once more. Anyway, yeah, give me a ticket for an aeroplane. I ain't got time to make no fast train. And all the lonely days are gone. I'm coming home, yeah. Well, my baby, she wrote me a letter. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. That brought it all back.
Mm. Love that song.
Can't go wrong with a bit of a cocker in your mouth. Oh, hang on. Whoa. That came out wrong.
That's what she said.
What I meant is before you go to bed at night, sometimes it's nice to curl up with a little bit of cock. Oh, no, hang on.
I've done it again.
What's going on? Sometimes at the end of the date, what I really like to do is to, review wines and then relax to a bit of cocker. Oh, hang on.
Gulp.
Edit that out. Gulp. Gulp. Oh.
Alrighty.
Well, listen, Kerwin, I think we've only got halfway through talking about what it's like to be a musician.
Mm.
So I think we might pick this up in the next podcast. What do you think?
Absolutely. Good idea. There's so much more to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've hardly figured. So
we haven't even got to the Kelso era.
That's all very well, Kerwin, but that does leave our listener with one question.
Indeed it does, Kelso. What's all that about? Brilliant. Chat to you next week, and you can tweet us on podcast KAK with all of your reviews, song requests, and hate mail.
And also making fun of our podcast handle, podcast CAC. Nothing there to make fun of, but maybe you can bend over backwards. tell a friend about our podcast, because that's how we hope to grow our listener base. And maybe give us a sweet 5-star review on your podcaster of choice.
Absolutely. Till next time.
Hello.
See you later.